Otitis media or middle ear infection is a very common issue. It is the second most common reason for a child to see a GP and the most common reason antibiotics are prescribed to children. According to a large Australian database called the Beach Data, 80% of kids with otitis media are prescribed an antibiotic. This week, we'll take a dive into the evidence for antibiotics for otitis media with special guest, Professor Paul Glasziou. Hello, and welcome to episode 11 of the Evidence-Based Medicine podcast, where each week we cover a landmark clinical trial that has shaped medicine. This week, antibiotics for otitis media. So, a study was published in the New England Journal of Medicine in December of 2016 by Hoberman et al. That compared 10 days of amoxicillin clavulanate to 5 days of amoxicillin clavulanate for treating kids with acute otitis media. They managed to randomize 520 kids between the ages of 6 and 23 months, and this was a very well-designed trial. Now, they found that 10 days of antibiotics was far superior to 5 days. Their main outcome was clinical failure, and this occurred in 34% of those getting 5 days of antibiotics versus 16% in those getting 10 days. So 10 days of antibiotics reduced clinical failure by 18% compared to 5 days of antibiotics, making a number needed to treat of 6. So 1 in every 6 kids will avoid clinical failure if they are treated with 10 days of antibiotics versus 5 days. And this paper got a lot of press. Should we be treating otitis media with antibiotics again? Did we get it wrong with the recommendation that we shouldn't treat? Should we change the guidelines to recommend 10 days of antibiotics use? But this study is weird, because when you compare antibiotics to placebo, the benefit is nowhere near as good. So comparing antibiotics to less antibiotics was way better than comparing antibiotics to no antibiotics. How does this make sense? To put it more starkly, the exact same research team that did this study did a different study in 2011, also published in the New England Journal of Medicine, where they compared 10 days of amoxicillin clavulanate to placebo. And here, there was no difference. So the same team of researchers, with almost identical study designs for both studies, found that on the one hand, 10 days of antibiotics doesn't work, yet on the other hand, showed that 10 days of antibiotics is better than 5 days of antibiotics. What's going on here? Now, the answer lies in a wonderfully written opinion article published in the BMJ by Paul Glasziou entitled How to Hide Trial Results in Plain Sight. But before going into that, let's first cover the previous evidence on treating otitis media with antibiotics. So, a Cochrane review on antibiotics for otitis media was done in 2015, which found 13 randomized controlled trials that were of a low risk of bias and made up a total of 3,400 children with otitis media. And these were studies comparing antibiotics versus placebo. They looked at a heap of outcomes, but the main ones showed there was a greater reduction in symptoms at 2 to 3 days in those who took antibiotics. 84% of children had improvement by 2 to 3 days in the placebo group versus 89% in those who took antibiotics. So antibiotics increased the chance of recovery by 5%, making a number needed to treat of 20. There was no difference in hearing loss, no difference in suppurative complications like meningitis or mastoiditis. There was a reduction in eardrum perforations. This went from 5% in the placebo group to 2% in the antibiotic group. And in terms of adverse events, the number needed to harm for vomiting, diarrhea, or rash was 14 in those taking the antibiotics. So to summarize, the Cochrane review found a 5% increased recovery rate at 2 to 3 days with antibiotics, a 3% decrease in ear perforation, but no difference in long-term hearing or any other complication. So again, how does it make sense that the difference between 10 days and 5 days of antibiotics is so huge, where the difference between antibiotics and no antibiotics is so small? Alright, so I actually managed to bump into Paul Glasziou and record his opinion on this paper. I was at the Primary Healthcare and Research Conference, or PICRIS, where Paul was giving a presentation, and I seized the opportunity. I pulled him aside before one of the conference dinners and recorded a little interview with him about it. But before I play the interview, I just want to talk about Paul for a second. He is a bit of a hero of mine. So if there's a movie I really like, I'll find out who wrote it and directed it and go and watch all their other movies. Same with music. If I find a song that I love, I go and see who produced the song, much less interested in who actually sings the song, and go and listen to all the other songs that they produced. It's a great way to discover new music and new movies. And I do the same with research. If there's a study or an article that I really like on a topic that really interests me, I'll go and look at all the other papers that the author has published. So I first came across Paul Glasziou when I read an article in the BMJ called Too Much Medicine, Too Little Care, which was a really awesome editorial that kicked off a series on overdiagnosis in the BMJ, and it really helped mold my evidence-based medicine journey. Then, when I looked at what other research he had done, I realized that he had co-authored a lot of the Cochrane reviews that I use like on a daily basis, like the Cochrane review on antibiotics for otitis media, the Cochrane review on antibiotics for sore throat, the Cochrane review for fecal occult blood testing and bowel cancer screening, and he was one of the authors for one of my favorite systematic reviews, which looked at any trial that compared bed rest to non-bed rest, either as a primary treatment for something like back pain, preeclampsia, or heart attack, or as a recovery tool after a procedure. And they found that bed rest was consistently associated with worse outcomes. So yeah, bit of a hero. Actually, the whole team in the Department of Evidence-Based Medicine at Bond University really do outstanding work. So here's what Paul had to say.
Hi Daniel, I'm Paul Glasziou from Bond Uni. I used to be a practicing GP, but now I just do research. Just as background, I was interested in this study because we did the Cochrane review looking at the effect of antibiotics generally, antibiotics versus placebo in acute otitis media, finding that generally there was a pretty small effect. So I was very interested in this study, which compared in young children with acute otitis media, which they had verified, by the way, very carefully diagnostically, which is not usually done in trials. They had compared giving a 5-day standard course of antibiotics with a prolonged course, a 10-day course. And in the 5-day one, they get 5 days of antibiotics and then 5 days of placebo. So they blinded whether you were on the five-day or the 10-day course. Great. And their conclusion from this was that there was a substantial effect. Well, I think you have to look carefully at their definition of clinical failure, which included the otoscopic findings, you know, how red and edematous the drum looked, for example, or whether there was some fluid behind the ear. To me, as a GP and a parent, what's important is how my kid feels. So when I looked at this with my colleagues who are interested in this area, what we were interested in is the symptoms. And they actually had an otitis media specific symptom scale with a 0 to 14 scale.
So that was a secondary outcome, wasn't it?
It was their secondary outcome, but in our Cochrane review, it's the primary outcome. So we were interested in it from the patient's perspective. What would this actually mean for patients? And if you plot that out, you actually see that there's a pretty minimal effect. I did this in a BMJ blog that I've entitled How to Hide a Trial Result in Plain Sight. If you do that, you see that even though there is a statistically significant effect, actually both groups' symptoms have gotten much better. And there's a trivial difference between the two groups, and most people I've showed this to think it's a trivial difference in symptoms.
So just to go over some of those points again, almost every other study that looked at antibiotics for otitis media had used the child's symptom as their primary outcome, including the Cochrane review and even including the 2011 Hoberman study that compared 10 days of amoxicillin clavulanate to placebo. This is the AOM-SOS score, or the Acute Otitis Media Severity of Symptom score. Now, this scale assesses things that parents and children really care about: ear pain, ear tugging, irritability, decreased play, eating less, and fever. The 2016 Hoberman study that compared 10 days to 5 days of amoxicillin clavulanate used a different primary outcome. Their primary outcome was any of these three things. Number one, if they still had otoscopic signs of infection. Number two, if they did not have a complete or nearly complete resolution of signs and symptoms by the end of treatment. And number three, worsening infection. And there are a few problems with these outcomes. Firstly, who cares about how the ear looks otoscopically? This is a disease-oriented outcome rather than a patient-oriented outcome. Secondly, this outcome is very subjective. If they did not have complete or nearly complete resolution of signs and symptoms, that's a very wishy-washy sort of outcome. And number three, all the other trials have used the AOM SOS scale as their primary outcome, which is a patient-oriented outcome. Why did this study change it? Now, the authors did also use the AOM SOS scale, but used it as a secondary outcome, and it was very difficult to find the results for this. You had to look at different rows from two different tables to find this result. And Paul Glasziou has done that for us in his article and has even drawn us a nice graph comparing the severity of symptoms over time between the two groups. Have a look at the graph. The link will be in the show notes. You'll see that there was really no difference between the 10 days or the 5 days in terms of this symptom severity score. So what about harms? Now, this blew me away. 1 in 3 kids in this trial had diaper dermatitis or nappy rash. Now, as a parent of 2 kids who are still in nappies, this is a nightmare. They're in pain when you wipe them, you're forever putting creams on, and you're getting peed on all the time because you're trying to maximize their nappy free time. 1 in 3 also had diarrhea. Again, huge. And the other issue was that this study was done in a hospital setting. So these kids were going to the emergency department, and they had very strict criteria for which kids were allowed into the study. They had to have obvious bulging of the tympanic membrane and the presence of middle ear effusions. A lot of the children had fever as well. So if we struggle to show a benefit for antibiotics in these patients, how much more so will they be useless in those with a slightly red drum, a bit grizzly, coming to their GP and not to hospital? One more thing to note, and this is a bit of a dun-dun-dun moment. The lead author, Hoberman, apparently has a patent on an amoxicillin clavulanate combination. So there are some conflicts of interest here. And this doesn't make the data wrong, but given that there is potential gain by him proving more amoxicillin clavulanate is better, it definitely warrants a more skeptical eye when looking at the methods and results. So thank you, Paul Glasziou, for looking at it with a skeptical eye and then publishing on it. So what's the bottom line?
Bottom line is you should rarely use antibiotics in otitis media generally, perhaps in the very young kids and particularly with bilateral otitis media, and I'd be happy with giving them a short course rather than a long course because less antibiotics means less resistance.
Alrighty, that's it from me. Thank you, Paul. I felt like a schoolgirl meeting Justin Bieber. All the references and show notes will be at www.ebmpodcast.com. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast and subscribe to my YouTube channel where I make short evidence-based videos. I've even done one on antibiotics for otitis media where I managed to squeeze 21 really bad puns into one 4-minute video. That's at www.youtube.com/DrDanMD. DrDanMD. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Dr. Aronov, that's DrAronov. Paul is at Paul Glasziou. Next week, we'll go into the evidence for magnesium as a treatment for leg cramping at night. There was a randomized trial that came out a few months ago looking into this, and I don't know about you, but a lot of my patients take magnesium for leg cramps, and they swear by it. Now, where did this come from, and what's the evidence? That's next week. I'm Daniel Aronov. I'll talk to you then.